This is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2021, episode 25. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. The college football playoff is set, and we are going to be talking about it today. And Nebraska is starting to fill its assistant coaching slots, and one former name or former player is making a big splash in Lincoln. Good to have you along. I'm Travis Justice, and the newly 50-year-old, he is 50. It's the one, the only, Dr. Rob Zadiska. You still have that Hawkeye glass I got you?
Oh, hell yeah.
You were so oblivious to what was going on that night, weren't you? Because
pretty much.
Because Anjanette ran all over, and Anjanette's my wife. And see, Rob had his birthday party, a small little gathering at the Casual Pint. Where else would we have a birthday party but where you drink beer?
Beer.
And Rob, showed up, and his first pint was served in a Hawkeye glass. And he just thought, well, the owner at the Casual Pint's from Iowa, or the bartender must be an Iowa fan, just giving it to me. Little did he know, my wife ran around Omaha all day long looking
no,
for Hawkeye.
No, I had no idea. That night I didn't.
And they gave Rob the pint of glass, or the pint of beer, with a card, and he just put the card in his pocket, and he didn't even pay attention. So, but happy birthday, by the way.
That's good. Good.
So today we're recording this actually on December 5th. You know the significance of December 5th? Come on, Mr. Smart Guy. Come on, Mr. Doctor, Mr. Brain. Significance of December 5th.
It was 2 days before Pearl Harbor.
Well, that, but Prohibition officially ended on December 5th.
I'm trying to think of something like World War II related. I'm like, well, we got December 7th coming up. That's a day that lives in infamy.
Life becomes normal again as we get a drink, liquor and beer and everything else. And you brought some beer today. What'd you bring here?
So got a little Toppling Goliath out of Decorah, Iowa, doing the Digital Dawn Double IPA. What do you think? I haven't tried this one yet.
You know, I'm not an IPA guy, and when I hear the word double IPA, that scares the hell out of me.
Yeah, but you like pseudo sue.
Yeah, pseudo sue. Yeah, I mean that's
it's not like pseudo sue is exactly what I'd consider a light, refreshing IPA. No. It's a little bit of a punch in the mouth.
The weird thing about this, and I don't know if it's a California style IPA or whatever, but it's got that citrus on the front end and the bitterness on the back end.
Yeah, see, and I love that. That's perfect in my mind.
Yeah, so you brought this because Toppling Goliath is based out of Iowa, and Iowa played in the Big Ten Championship. Well, I'm sorry, it didn't play in the Big Ten Championship. It showed up in Indianapolis and then left Indianapolis having lost 42-3 and pretty much embarrassed almost everybody. What are you doing right there?
I'm pointing to my beer.
What are you drinking?
I got a Bell's out of Michigan.
Oh, you suck. Look at you just rubbing it in. Did you go to the Casual Pint just to get all this stuff this morning?
Winners get sprinkles, baby.
Did you get to watch any of that game last night?
I watched probably, I mean, God, yeah. I'm trying to think when we finally switched it off. Like, you hit that run in the fourth quarter where it was like, okay, it's now 28-3 this game. What the hell? It's 42-3. Like, God, they just poured it on at the end there.
You know, it was interesting because at the beginning of the game, Brian Ferentz actually showed a little imagination on offense, but Iowa could not score in the red zone, which if you're not going to score in the red zone, you got serious problems.
They lost in the special teams game,
which was really, really weird.
Yeah, weird. That might have been the most un-Iowa performance I've seen,
and especially from a defensive standpoint, where they gave up big play after big play after big play.
They did. You know, the thing is, though, thinking about it, I'd be interested to see. I know everybody and their dog's like, well, Nebraska, blah blah blah, close game with Michigan, best 3-9 team ever. Whatevs. It'd be interesting to know how Nebraska would match up against Michigan now versus Michigan month ago.
I would agree with you. We had this discussion. We were on the radio till 2 o'clock in the morning, and Jim Harbaugh came up, and I actually, and this is going to rub people the wrong way. And yeah, and listen, I got a ton of tweets last night. People were tweeting at you, laughing at me. I deserve all the laughs, all right? Because Iowa was horrible. There was no doubt about it. Iowa was horrible. And now it's
like Michigan looked pretty damn good. Michigan though, looked too. Really let's, good. Let's not take too much away from them. And as much as I hate Michigan.
And it was one of those things where at 14-3 at halftime, you're like, okay, Iowa gets the football to start the second half. Can they do what they did against Nebraska? They weren't out of it at halftime by any
means. Oh, exactly.
And it was even still offensively, if you look at the numbers, Iowa wasn't killing it, but they were hanging in there, but they just kept up giving up the big play, and Iowa's not built offensively to rally from a 28-3, even 21-3 deficit.
Well, they did against Nebraska. Well,
but see, Nebraska lets everybody rally against it.
Well, that's true. You know, the other thing is that when you look at that game, I mean, you talk about the red zone scoring, and Iowa is a team, when they have the opportunities, they got to take advantage of them. And they just didn't. I mean, they got some turnovers. They did some good things on both sides of the ball. It's just when you had those opportunities to actually put points up, they were not able to do it.
So Michigan slides into the college football playoff. Bama is number one. Michigan is number two. Georgia, number three. Cincinnati, number four. So for the first time ever, you get the group of five into the college football playoff. Your thoughts on the top four?
I mean, I like the top four. I think the thing that was – I didn't see the Alabama win coming over Georgia.
You really? You didn't see it?
I mean, on the flip side, I mean, Georgia has looked really, really good. And, you know, we had this entire Twitter discussion where, you know, there was – it was basically an SEC discussion that popped up, and people were talking about, hey – if you're an Alabama person, if you are an SEC West person, this should not surprise you at all. It's a grind. It's brutal. There is a reason the SEC West is 11-1 since 2010 in the SEC title game. I mean, that's you think about that for a second, you're like, holy shit, that's kind of that's a pretty freaking impressive statistic. And I get the Big Ten's obviously kind of skewed in that same sense as well, too, where you look at it, and obviously with Ohio State, it's kind of been skewed there to the well, in Michigan State that one year. I mean, the Big Ten East is kind of where that top echelon tends to hang out. When you look at the SEC, I get it. In hindsight, you go back and look and you're like, oh, yeah, I guess that totally makes sense. Georgia's looked really good. Alabama has not necessarily looked all that dominant. I mean, you look at that Auburn game, Alabama looked damn near pedestrian. I mean,
but were they looking ahead to Georgia? That's the big question. Were they looking past the Iron Bowl, which is dangerous?
I don't think. If you're Alabama, you really think you look past the fucking Iron Bowl?
No, you don't.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those games. I think Alabama fans, if it came down to a choice, I think Alabama fans would rather win the Iron Bowl than win the SEC title.
My first Alabama game I ever went to, it was at Legion Field in Birmingham, and it was Alabama against Southern Miss. My good friend from college was a huge Alabama fan, so I got press passes. We went. I took him down there. Gene Stallings was still the head coach.
That was a good era. Yeah, that was a little old school.
Yeah, that was some old school, but I'll never forget this because we were just talking to Bama fans, right? We're just trying to soak in the culture and take something new in, and we were asking about the Iron Bowl. And they go, you know how Southern Baptist Alabama is. I said, yeah. They said, well, here's the deal. The Iron Bowl is so important to Bama fans and Auburn fans that if Jesus Christ himself showed up at the Iron Bowl, they'd tell him to get the fuck off the field and they'd get revived later.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you got a clear understanding of what that was. But yeah, so Alabama's number one. The reason, you know, I'm backtracking here because we're going to go into the college football playoff, but there's two things that happened over the weekend that really made me think about Scott Frost and the situation Nebraska's in right now. Kirk Ferentz beforehand, and listen, Nebraska fans have been great on Twitter to tell me how average of a coach Kirk Ferentz is. And I think he's above average. I don't think he's average. I think I'm not saying he's an elite coach.
Well, and I jumped in because a couple people had pointed out that it's just like, nah, look at Iowa's trash. And I'm like, well, they're better than Nebraska.
Yeah, well, and they got blown out last night, and no, they don't have any national championships. They haven't been in a conference title conversation. Well, they were last night, but they haven't won a conference since 2004. I get it. Kirk Ferentz has 7 10-win seasons. For the most part, he's an 8-win season type of guy. But Kirk Ferentz, getting ready for the Big Ten title game, said, listen, if you look at the best and most consistent programs right now, and I think Iowa's fairly consistent, right? It's because you have consistency in coaching staffs, administrations, and everything. You look at Nick Saban, I think there's a lot of consistency there. You look at, you know, Dabo Sweeney and Clemson, there's consistency there. And he was talking about Jim Harbaugh. Listen, Jim Harbaugh almost got fired last year. Remember after the COVID season, I think they won, two games, and he had to take a pay cut. They had to restructure the contract. He came back a completely different coach. And I think what Kirk Ferentz was saying, and not just to Nebraska fans, but also, listen, sometimes it takes time. Sometimes you're not going to get the immediate results you want, and you can't keep switching over 3, 4, 5 years chasing the dragon. If all you're going to do is chase the dragon, you're never going to be able to establish a culture. And that's why I think one more year for Frost is big, because you can use Jim Harbaugh as example number one.
And I agree with that. I guess I look at these situations. Everybody wants to do – let's do a comparison of what people think are like-minded or like situations. I look at Nebraska. Let's take Nebraska, Iowa, and Michigan. In my opinion, you've got three programs, and it's completely apples and oranges between all True. Three, or apples, oranges, and bananas, however you want to phrase it. You look at Michigan had one really bad year. And it was last year, and it was the COVID season, and it was one of those, there were some programs where just, man, shit just didn't work out well during the whole COVID thing and the way stuff went down. I fully grant that, and I did not quite understand fully the Harbaugh, let's fire him. That seemed to be coming from within the Michigan program. Now, from outside, obviously, I freaking hate Michigan. I cannot stand Michigan. Harbaugh drives me nuts. Like, I was relishing last year like you wouldn't believe. But I also did think it was kind of a one-off, because as much as I hate Michigan, and as much as I think Harbaugh is a very good coach but not a great coach, and maybe he's going to totally prove me wrong here. I mean, that happens. But he's done okay at Michigan. I mean, it's not like...
He's won 75% of his games.
Yeah, I mean, he's one year... I mean, they win 10 games one year, 12 games the next. He's got a couple 7-8 win seasons in there. He's got a few 9-10 win seasons. He's consistently been actually pretty darn good. The thing that's eluded him is that he's probably been... I think people want to look at Harbaugh and say, well, he's Michigan Scott Frost. I'm like, no, he's really not. This guy's winning on average 9 games a year, not or almost 10 a year.
You know what it is? It's Tom Osborne when he couldn't beat Oklahoma in the 70s.
Little of that. I mean, the only other thing I'd maybe throw in there, I think he's Michigan's Bo Pelini. And the reason I say that is you got a guy. There's two things he's had a lot of trouble doing. Beating the rival, although Pelini actually did pretty well against Iowa.
Yeah.
Harbaugh has had trouble beating the rivals and winning the big games. And that was, but he still churns out 9 wins a year. And that's Pelini in a nutshell.
But this year, what Pelini couldn't do, he beat Ohio State and he won the Big Ten championship game. Those are two big games.
And those were huge. And I think that's why everybody's like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing ever. And I'm like, okay, you know what? It's basically this year he did two things. He won two more games than he normally would have. He won one of his rivalry games and he won a conference title game. That's it. So it's not like one of these things.
Yeah, but that rivalry game's a pretty big rivalry game. That was Ohio State. That's the game.
We still lost to Michigan State. Yeah. I mean, don't tell me that's not a thorn in the side of people up there, because it still is. And the thing is, I mean, I think you're not far off when you say you compare them to Osborne. It's just Osborne would lose to Oklahoma, and then they'd go to a bowl game and beat LSU in the Sugar Bowl every other year. So, I mean, it's like they did some very good things prior to him finally beating Oklahoma consistently, finally winning conference and national titles. But yeah, it's kind of this Osborne Pelini kind of thing with Harbaugh, where he's winning 9-10 games on average every year for Michigan. It's just he's not beating the rival. And for a lot of programs, that matters. And it does at a place like Michigan and Ohio State.
We were transitioning into the college football playoff. You and I kind of disagree. I would support expansion when and it will come eventually. It may not be as fast as we thought because there's been some hiccups, and I think the Pac-12's throwing a wrench into everything. Because I really don't think anybody below the top four now can compete with the four that are in there, and I really think Georgia and Alabama are heads and shoulders above everybody else. I could be wrong.
You got the computer there. Can you pull up the final ranking? Sorry, I'm popping open an Iowa beer now. I'm gonna come back over from the non-Michigan
side.
Well,
I mean, the top six, I believe, is goes Alabama, Michigan, Georgia, Cincinnati, Notre Dame. And I think it's Baylor after.
Okay. I mean, I could see Baylor on a good day doing some damage. They've got the athletes to do it. They really do. I thought Oklahoma State essentially self-destructed in that Big 12 title game. I mean, there was probably far more self-inflicted injury there. On a good day.
And I'm wrong. It was Ohio State, then Baylor. So Ohio State's sixth, then Baylor's.
Okay. Seven. I could see Ohio State doing some damage. There's been Ohio State teams that have done better than people thought they were going to do. I mean, they've knocked off Clemson a few times in the playoffs. They've won one playoff national championship in a year with a third-string quarterback when nobody thought they'd be able to do it. Everybody says, now, yes, you're not going to get past the top four. I mean, once you get past top four, it's all trash. Nobody's got a chance once you get past that. Bullshit. You see teams do it, and you see teams do it at multiple levels. Are you telling me that on a good day, Oklahoma, Ohio State, Oklahoma State, there's some of these teams. Utah. Now I get it. It's Pac-12. Utah's playing really good football right now. I want to see Utah go in there and play Cincinnati right now.
Okay, hear me out on this one. And I don't disagree with you. And I do fall in line with on any given day, somebody in these top 10 can do it. And look at A&M beat Alabama. I get that. I think people, when they think college football expansion, just want more for the sake of having more. They want the feeling of the March Madness upset. But I don't think you're going to get that upset the deeper you go. You might get it when, let's say you do a 12-team playoff, right? And that first weekend you might get it. I don't think you're going to get it the second weekend. I think the more dialed in these teams get, the less you can take somebody by surprise. And listen, I'm not opposed to expansion. I know it's going to happen.
I do think
for the most part, the college football playoff committee gets the top four right.
I get it and I understand that, but at the same time, before we had the playoffs, look at bowl games. How many times you get a bowl game where you get, okay, well, this conference and these teams are going to dominate the bowls, and then they don't?
That's fair.
I mean, how many times do you get a UCF knocking off an Auburn in a bowl game? It actually happens, I think, a little more frequently, and I understand your point. Well, yeah, but once you get in a playoff and these teams get more dialed in, yeah, I think by the time you get to that point in the season, they are dialed in. They're also a little tired. They've got some niggling injuries that they're dealing with, and there's a lot of other factors at play here. I think people will ultimately be more surprised when they see more teams get in. And again, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're going to see the exact same people finishing it out year in and year out.
Now, to counter your point about the bowls, and you're right, we saw UCF beat at Auburn. We are seeing in bowls now, if teams don't make the college football playoff, they're done. They've cashed out. They don't care about it as much. And you're also seeing a lot of players, key players, not playing in bowls anymore because if they're not playing for the title, they're protecting themselves for the National Football League. And that changes the dynamic of a team quite a bit.
It does. And again, I think the playoff would keep a lot of those guys around. For better or worse in their NFL career. And somebody made the point to me on Twitter that if you have a playoff, you're risking injury to a lot of these guys who would go on to have great NFL careers. And I'm like, okay, hold on a second here. We're not adding that many more games to a season. And I mean, I would say knock off get rid of one non-conference game, drop down to 11 games, keep 9 conference matchups, and you roll from there with the playoffs. The top two teams, in a 12-team playoff, that assumes you got what, four first-round buys?
Yep.
So you got 4 first-round buys. There's one less game for those teams.
And as we just said, odds are those 4 are probably going to be playing in the championship.
Yeah, and then there's 3 more games. So they're sitting at 14, which you see some of these teams. I remember a few years ago you had a team that played a quote-unquote preseason game, then went through the regular season, then went through the playoffs and won it, and played 14 games. It's not like we're adding that much on for the two teams that make it to the final. So it's a lot of these arguments seem kind of stupid to me. Look at Division II and I believe
Division III, NAIA, you name it.
Yeah,
right?
NAIA does a 16-team playoff. I think 1AA and Division II, I believe, do – I know Division II does a 28-game playoff. I think –
Well, Mike Leach brought it out to where you could have every team in 1A play in the playoff, and you'd still it wouldn't add that many games,
It really wouldn't. You're literally knocking 50 of them out the first round. But, 1AA, I think, does a 32-team playoff. There's plenty of models out there on how to do this.
I think they're 24.
Are they 24? I know. I know D2 is 28.
Okay.
So, it's not like it's this small field that goes into these. So, a lot of these, all of the divisions currently in playoffs are going to go 3 weeks into December. So, for whatever it's worth, don't give me this argument about it being too many games and too stressful for the players. It's not that much more than what they do at any other level.
And again, I know people are going to think that I'm anti-expansion. I'm not anti-expansion. I just don't believe what you're going to have is more teams in the playoff. But I firmly believe that the top 4 and usually top 2 are so much better than everybody else that you're going to have some consistency at the top. If I'm wrong, that's great. That's better for college football if I am wrong. I want to be
wrong. It is. At the same time, I also think – I don't think it's 2 to 4. I think it's probably – I think we're going to end up finding out that it's probably – that number, I think it's going to be a lot closer to 6 to 8.
Okay.
Because, again, and the reason I'm saying that, I'm sitting here and you look at the teams not in it, and I'm sitting – and I think, okay, right day, right year, right time. With the current teams in 2021, I can see Notre Dame making a run. I could see Oklahoma making a run. I could see Ohio State making a run. I could see Baylor and Okie State making runs here. I could see somebody like Utah making a run.
Yeah, Utah looked good against Oregon, and we just don't know how good the Pac-12 is really going to be. Quick reminder, tomorrow is, if it depends on when you're listening to this, we're recording this on the 5th, the Remington Trophy finalist will be announced, I believe, on December 6th. The winner coming up later on in the week with the ESPN Awards show. And make sure to go to the Remington Trophy presentation in Lincoln on January 15th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. You will not be disappointed. Go to RemingtonTrophy.com for more information. Of course, now that football is over, you might be wondering, well, what NFL games can I go to? What college basketball games can I go to? What concerts can I go to? I have to call Chad Carr from Ticket Express because the Turnpike Troubadours are coming out and doing a concert in May at Red Rocks in Colorado. I need tickets to that because it was sold out almost instantly. So I'm going to let the dust settle in the aftermarket, and then I'm going to call Chad and say, hey, I need to go to Red Rocks and he can get me there because Chad has tickets to every single event across the country. And when you need tickets, whether they're sports related, entertainment related, go to TicketExpress.com. Had a quick conversation with Scott Strunk over at Husker Hounds this weekend. He's been a busy guy. He's had a hard weekend or a hard year. He just some stuff personally and some of his employees, and we wish him the best. And just know that he's got three locations in the Omaha area. And when you outfit really 100% of Memorial Stadium, you know that's the place to buy your big red gear. That's Husker Hounds. Go to HuskerHounds.com. The big news this week, there's lots of big news, and we're going to transition LSU into Nebraska. Brian Kelly, square peg, round hole, going to Louisiana State.
He's trying to make that hole, or that peg, little more round with his accent.
I just don't get it. I don't see this working. I think it's not going to be a good marriage. I think over time, he's not a good old boy. He's just not. But that frees up Mickey Joseph, who is now returning to Nebraska to be, what is it, the associate head coach and the wide receivers coach under Scott Frost.
He's the O coordinator. Come on.
Is he?
Well, that's not my title. I mean, associate head coach, wide receivers coach, and passing game coordinator. That's half an O coordinator just with the one title, and he's got three titles. He's the O coordinator, dude.
So will he be the one calling the plays, or is Scott still looking for a guy to call plays? Because I think Scott's still looking for a guy to call plays.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, I don't think Scott's going to call the plays, but I could totally see Mickey doing it.
Your thoughts about Mickey coming back? I mean, he's been at LSU for a while, known as a very good recruiter.
I don't know. I was going to say, I don't know why he came back. That's horrible.
You're going to make a lot of people mad by saying
I say that in the sense of, okay, a couple of things here. One, I love Nebraska. Don't get me wrong. Okay. I live and die for Husker football. It's my team. As many jokes as we crack about it, and as many times as I walk in here wearing a Michigan State t-shirt, I'm a Nebraska guy. I freaking bleed for the Huskers, and it kills me when they don't do well. At the same time, I'm looking at Mickey and the position he's in where I don't know. My assumption in the rumors I heard, and again, this is like third, fourth, fifth hand info, so don't quote me on this as 100% factual. I'm just saying what I had heard through the grapevine is that Brian Kelly did offer him a spot on his staff. Mickey turned it down. Maybe long term, that'll pan out to be a good move.
I think it will be.
I look at Mickey, and when I say I'm not sure why he's coming back, you've got a program that's been kind of sitting on thin ice right now. You've got a program where literally half the coaching staff just got let go. You've got a head coach on a hot seat. There's discord amongst the players and the fan base. This is not what you would look at from the outside and from the onset and sit there and go like, this is a stable situation. Look, it's all rainbows and unicorns. It's not. I mean, this is not a stable situation to come into. Potential benefits of it, though, is, you know, let's say stuff doesn't work out. Let's say Mickey kind of chenanders his way into doing some very good things on the offensive side of the ball. Nebraska just ends up not actually winning games. Is Mickey then in position to take over as a head coach in the future if Frost is let go?
That's a good question.
I mean, it's kind of something I sort of wonder if that's sort of a, hey, is there something buried in there somewhere where he gets some sort of right of first refusal if Nebraska does decide to make a change? Now, I'm totally speculating here, and I'm not sure how smart or fair that is. But it does make you wonder, why would he come back to Nebraska and what on the surface is this incredibly unstable situation when you're a guy with his type of resume, his acumen and reputation? He's got a great reputation within the coaching community.
Well, I'll say this. You can say that Brian Kelly offered him a job, but the truth is I'm sure it was one of these when he got hired. There's probably one guy LSU says, we want you to keep. And that's Mickey Joseph, because he's from New Orleans. He knows the area so well, right? And I'm sure Brian Kelly, no coach likes to be told who they have to keep. So, sure, I'm going to offer him a job, but how hard am I really going to try to keep Mickey Joseph around on my staff? Because, I mean, this dude just fired a strength and conditioning coach, been around 21 years, hired by Nick Saban, kept through Les Miles and Ed Orgeron. A pretty good staple is kids, a player in a team. I mean, good old boys down there don't like it when you start messing with one of their own. They don't like it. And this would be an interesting marriage down there with Brian.
It is. And that's the other thing, too, is maybe Mickey's looking at the situation going like, here's a guy I don't want to work with.
Yeah.
And I mean, that might have been it's one of those. I'm sure Mickey loves Louisiana and loves LSU. Absolutely. This might have been less I'm going quote unquote home, because he was home here for college and then was it Omaha North? And then yeah. I thought Wayne State is where he coached.
I forget. I know he was at North for a little bit.
Yeah, I thought he was actually at Wayne State as well, too. Either way, this might have been a case of Mickey. He didn't want to be around Brian Kelly. He might have wanted to get the hell out of Brian Kelly, and coming back to Nebraska was even though it's, like I said, thin ice and not the most stable situation, it might have been the best one right out of the gate to get away from Brian Kelly.
Yeah, he was the run game coordinator at Wayne State in 1997.
There we go.
Yeah, that's a
couple years ago.
Yeah, I mean, he was at Tulane as a graduate assistant, Alabama State, Nicholls State, Central Oklahoma, Desire Street Academy in New Orleans, head coach there, Langston University. Alcorn State, Grambling State, La Tech, and then LSU. I mean, he's worked his way up. There's no doubt about it. Of course, Scott still has to hire some more assistant coaches. There's lots of rumors out there, lots of people who've said have been interviewed. But again, he's got to get this done fairly quickly because recruiting's got to take place. You got that early signing period.
It is. At the same time, there's a lot of these schools that are heading to bowl games that, yep. I mean, you talk about some of the staff people that are getting discussed in regards to Pitt, Wake Forest, Army, et cetera. Yeah, these teams are still playing football. And so that kind of makes it a little bit difficult in terms of going in and trying to pluck these coaches out of there. It might be a situation where you see some names announced here over the next couple of days. I'm not sure anybody actually comes rolling into Lincoln in the next couple of days. But I think you start seeing some announcements, though.
Adrian Martinez says he's in the transfer portal. It's not shocking, but it was kind of like this excited, not excited, kind of like the, okay, it was just a weird feeling you saw with fans, right? I mean, knew how talented he was, but he drove you crazy at the same time.
Yeah, no, I think the fan base in general, it's sort of one of these, not a love-hate deal, but I think most people, you ask them, what's your opinion of Adrian Martinez? And I think everybody on the planet is going to tell you, great human being, incredible leader, wonderful guy, monstrous amount of talent. But the guy's a winner in life. He's not clutch on the football field. I hate to say it. He's not. I'm saying this. I'm only talking about the game of football here. I'm not talking about Adrian as a person, but on the football field, Adrian Martinez he's not a clutch quarterback. He's got huge amounts of talent and athletic ability. The statistics he puts up are off the charts. I'm so tired of hearing about yardage-based statistics when it comes to quarterbacks. If you've got a quarterback and he is churning out insane numbers for you, I think you need to double check how concerned you are. Because what that means is you may not have enough talent around that guy to help shoulder the load and win games. I see a lot of these quarterbacks who churn out amazing amounts of yardage. I think, honestly, at some point, I want some statistician to, like, break this down for me. Because at some point, you cross a line where there's an inverse relationship to the statistical yardage your quarterback is generating and the number of games you're winning. Because what that means is when you look at a guy like an Adrian Martinez, a Taylor Martinez, where they are just generating monstrous, monstrous statistical numbers, you got to worry, where's the run game in all of this?
Good question.
I mean, and because if you don't have that, you're not winning football games. I mean, there's a reason the run and shoot kind of failed. There's a reason at some point the fun and gun doesn't quite work anymore. The air raid's been awesome. Okay, show me how many national championships the air raid has won. Again, you go back to the teams that are consistently in the playoff, in the top 10, consistently winning football games and winning championships. And I'll show you programs that have consistently really good running games to complement their passing offense. And that's just, when I look at Adrian, I love the guy. He's a stat monster. He's an awesome human being. He's not a clutch winning quarterback. And I think most fans feel the same way. I think they're torn because they love him as a person. They love having him on the team. I'm going to go to Nebraska football fan hell for saying this. But Adrian Martinez, he's like the ideal backup quarterback.
He's going to be a starter for somewhere next year. Do you think he goes to Kansas State? That's where his girlfriend is. Do you think he ends up a Wildcat?
She's a soccer player there. That was my first guess. And part of it is it almost has it works on the girlfriend side. I totally get it. But you got a program that it's in the Big 12. I mean, they play NBA-style defense there, for God's sakes. He could go to K-State, and I think you've got a really, really good, solid coaching staff. There's some great people. I think Chris Kleiman's an outstanding human being and an excellent coach. I think I could see him going there and having a very good season. How about Iowa State?
What about Iowa State?
What year is Brock Purdy?
Well, he's done. But I think they want to give that'd be interesting. I mean, there's some good quarterbacks out there right now. I mean, Rattler from Oklahoma is looking for a home. I mean, there are some good quarterbacks out there.
He might even be more damn inconsistent than Adrian is.
I mean, he was the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman Trophy. How about Damian Daniels declaring for the NFL draft?
That one sucks because he's a baller. He's really good. I don't blame him at all. I mean, Nebraska's had kind of this little bit of a run here at D lineman. When you look at what Chenander and Tuioti have done on that defensive line, speaks volumes. And I think that had a huge amount to do with the good things that Nebraska was able to do over the last couple of years are due to those guys. If Nebraska really needs to worry about something, it's losing Chenander and especially Tuioti right now. That guy is I think an amazing defensive line coach, and we've had some great players, and losing Daniels is going to hurt. I was not surprised by that one though. That's one that didn't surprise me at all.
By the way, this Digital Dawn has some kick to it. I mean, I haven't had much to eat this morning, and I'm like halfway through this, and I'm like feeling.
Well, we got two more left here, so you better get your ass in gear, dude.
Well, it's funny because a lot of people, I have this wonderful podcast studio. I have this wonderful studio in my house, right? And it's brand new because we've remodeled it.
It is nice,
well organized.
Owen's put some work in down
my
here.
Son is, but now I've realized because of my son's music career. We have to start coordinating studio time. So we're actually under the gun for time today.
We need to pay Owen for studio time.
He's like, well, you didn't book the room. I'm like, well, I record every Sunday. He's like, well, we got to start having a sign-up sheet for who gets the studio and when they get the studio. So we're going to have to, like, put a Google sheet out there and assignment time. But I do want to say congratulations because the wrestling season kicked off over the weekend, and you have two kids that are wrestling. Your middle kid Ryan dominated, and your daughter, who's a freshman, yes, girls wrestling. You've been a big proponent, dude. She's going to win the state championship for freshman year.
I hope that's a great prediction. I'm not putting all my eggs in that basket yet. So she had
her skill level. I watched the matches on Facebook. Her skill level is a little bit higher than most people.
We did. I will say she and I went down. She had three matches. She got a first round bye. So she called it the Friday night fracas in Nebraska City. So we were in Nebraska City from 4 p.m. till almost midnight. She didn't get her. They had 25 girls teams there.
That's awesome. That is so awesome.
And that is one of three tournaments that were going on at the time, same night. So there was three girls tournaments. Nebraska City alone had 25 teams down there.
Nebraska or all over the Midwest?
It was just Nebraska. This is an NSAA, so it's Nebraska High School Sports, which you can pull in a few. I know there's
Iowa teams come over.
We do. And we got a triangular girls and boys at Creighton Prep. So you got a combo Creighton Prep, Omaha Marion team.
Nice.
Which is nice.
That's a big deal. I don't think people understand that Marion having a girls wrestling team is a big deal.
Props to them because their AD who sits on the NSAA has...
Rochelle Rolfs is awesome.
...has consistently voted in favor of sanctioning girls wrestling.
Rochelle's awesome.
From the get-go, so props to them. I hate saying this. It's something that's kind of near and dear to me. So... It's all the Lincoln schools. Still to this day, they still oppose it.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. You look at Omaha. Marion's been a big proponent of this. Absolute props to them because they've been a voice for change, and I've really been appreciative of that. But anyway, we got another big one on Tuesday. So it'll be Underwood, Iowa.
Yep.
Boys and girls, Prep Marion, and then Omaha West Side at Creighton Prep on Tuesday night.
That is the 7th?
Yes.
I call me. I may show up for that. I may go watch that.
Nice. We'll go get some Mexican over in Underwood afterwards.
But your daughter is very well skilled.
She did.
Of wrestling.
It did. She and I watched went back and reviewed her first two matches today, and I'm watching. So my son's a senior at West Side. Yeah. If chips fall right, he'll end up being a three-time state qualifier. I'm watching her double leg takedowns, and I'm like, I need your brother to watch this. He's got years on you in wrestling experience, and she's got a textbook double leg that brings tears to your eyes.
I know. I watched it. I'm like, she's really good.
Yeah.
You know who has a women's college wrestling program? Iowa.
Oh, she's
I'm just
aware.
Saying.
I will say Mark Manning, big proponent of it. He actually, apparently Mark Manning, this is kind of, I don't know how much, again, this is secondhand info that I'm putting out there. Apparently Manning took it to Eichhorst.
And he said
no. A handful of years ago, and Eichhorst just resoundingly shot it down.
Yeah.
Now, her third match, which was actually the title match for her weight class, she made it to the title match. And I didn't know this until literally right before her match. I looked up the gal that she was wrestling and came from a program. There's a handful of programs in this state, high school programs, that have had girls wrestling for a number of years. And it was West Point Beamer, South Sioux City. There's a couple of others that are really strong. Winnebago's really good. Crete's really good. Anyway, so this gal was a West Point Beamer kid who was a two-time state finalist. Won the state title as a sophomore, finished runner-up last year, and that's who my daughter had in the final.
And
came out, had a real nice double leg in the first period, jumped out to a 4-point lead. I think she extended it second period. I'm trying to remember. Kicked it up to, I think it was like an 8-4 lead in the second period, and then pinned her for the win. So
it's going to be a great wrestling season. I know Ryan got an offer from Augustana D2 school.
Kind of that was a big one. So it's interesting looking at how this is all playing out.
I'm going to throw it in there because I know Morningside's after him, but I'm going to have to throw Grand because you have Morningside and Grandview now for the NAIA championship.
I'm still like, I mean, we already talked about it. It's like, why the hell did they not find a way to get this game? I understand. Apparently, Durham puts on a show for these guys. Great spot. They love the stadium, love the setting. They just need this game in the state of Iowa somewhere.
Well, the Unidome, because you play, it seats 16,000. I guarantee.
Oh, they would pack it.
I think they would pack it. It would be one of the most. But I get it. You put a bid in. Durham, North Carolina, host the NAIA game. I get it. But it's going to be weird. I'm like, is Morningside, because they're going to bust probably, right? So is Morningside just going to stop and say, hey, we'll pick you up in Des Moines. We'll ride down together.
We'll all go together.
Is that how that works out? I don't know the answer to that. Crazy weekend. I'm still going to push for it. Joe Woodley was on my radio show on Friday. So,
we're big fans in the household. I know. Believe I'm just me saying, when I say that. So we like, which, I mean, if you saw, did you see his in the locker room post game speech to the Grandview football team
afterwards?
Yeah,
I didn't.
Oh God, it's awesome. Go look it up on Twitter. Yeah. It's awesome.
I mean, that was, they beat Lindsey Wilson, which was the defending NAIA national champion.
And Lindsey Wilson is, that's a
Mayor Lindsey Wilson.
It is, but I'll tell you what, it's a program down there in Kentucky, and that was a big win. That was a big win for Grandview.
Well, I tell you what, college football season may be over, but Rob and I aren't going to be done. We're gonna keep podcasting.
What are you talking about over? We got like 2 months left.
Not
dude.
Only that, but I do. Next week, we're going to talk about where we're going to be on the 17th of December. I need everybody to keep that date open. It's a Friday night, the 17th of December. Now, I am going to let you know something. You're going to have to cross the river to Iowa. All right?
Is there a strip club involved,
There's
Travis?
No strip clubs involved. I promise you that. You will have to cross over into the state of Iowa. But Rob and I are going to be hanging out someplace. All the details are coming up. And we're not going to be Rob's not going to be the only Nebraska person there. There's going to be some more Nebraska names that you will know hanging out there. So just next week, we'll let you know exactly where we're going to be, what time we're going to be there, and it's okay to cross the river. You won't get a disease. You won't like burn up by any means. But you're going to hang out with us on a Friday night, which is right before Christmas. We can have a beer and
Love
have
it.
A lot of fun. So a lot of fun. This is a faster podcast because my son needs the studio. Dr. Rob, have a great weekend.
Hell yeah.
And who knows, next week we'll probably be talking about more newly hired assistant coaches and even dive in deeper.
A lot of stuff coming.
Oh, there is a lot of stuff coming, and we are going to be here to talk about it. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. We will talk to you next time on the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy.